Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running a design studio, and more. All for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collin, Nolan Haynes, and Sandra Johnson.
Hi, I'm Troy Collar from TLC Creative Service, Inc., based in Southern California.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And I'm Nolan Haynes from Nolan Haynes Creative in Summery, Montclair, New Jersey.
Hey, so Summery, Montclair, New Jersey, and Midwest, which I'm hoping is Summery. What's happening in your studios? Anything exciting this week?
I'm working on a report for a client that needs to be 508 compliant. And it's something I've sort of dipped my toe in just rarely in the past, but I'm getting up to speed, and I'll have a link for my tip at the end of today is gonna relate to 508 compliance. So it's there's some stuff to think about.
I'm typing in 508 compliance just to make sure I know what we're talking about. That's the
ADA.
Thank you.
Yes. Act.
So It just means whether it's a presentation or a print report or a PDF or whatever, it can be essentially read, accessed by people with various disabilities in various ways.
Oh, there's a lot of, well, for general usage, there's all kinds of features I generally turn off in the options area.
That's right.
You know, they have the, what are they? Ease of access is what they call that tab. Well, they have an ease of access, which is all 508 compliant. See, I was getting 508 and 509. They're really closely related. 509 is for me, it's ADD, not ADA.
I almost snorted. That was funny.
What do you have going on, Troy?
You are part of my what's happening. I took your recommendation. I've been reading your recommendation from the last podcast, I think it was, for Factfulness by Hans Rosling. It's a good read. I've got this crazy 1 a.m. flight to Dallas, so I can go out there and do a single executive meeting and then turn around, return that evening. I figure I'll finish the book over those flights if I can stay awake. That's my plan. But it's a really good book. I wish the charts in it were a little bit larger. They're very small, fuzzy print, which you commented on, and I'm agreeing.
Yeah, that was a bit of a mistake on their part, but
yeah. For the studio, I mean, we've hit like this, what I call the summer productivity time. Do you get that in your studios? I mean, it's about late May through mid-July. We suddenly get a lot of projects that are all kind of corporate organizational things that
I think it depends on the fiscal years. I know one of my clients is ending their fiscal year soon. Usually mine are in August. That's when I get crazy.
Really? Yeah. So I didn't think about it for the fiscal year, and I really should have, because that's when we get all these requests for all the paperwork and billables and everything. I kind of attributed it to everyone suddenly not being focused on the beginning of the year chaos or overwhelmed with the end of the year holidays plus work. Everyone has this sweet spot where they're just before summer and they get super productive at the office, and we get lots of calls. I mean, we have several corporate template updates. I can think of three of them right now, two of them major projects, designer assigned to them full time for weeks on end. We've got lots of core presentation libraries and updates to, core sets of presentations. I can think of at least two large projects that are in right now that are, 300 plus slides to format. And we got lots of HR and finance departments suddenly contact us around this time of the year. We get them at the end of the year too. Anyways, we're just busy. I call it the summer productivity month, and we just get busy with studio work, not necessarily, travel projects, which is good. It aligns.
That's cool. For projects for me, I think it's amazing the type of clients we get to work with. I have a bunch of fun projects from organizational behavior to HSAs, health savings accounts, financial services, and a company that sells paper products. So it's fun, the type of clients that I get to work with. On a personal note, my youngest child, my son, who completed college in January, will have his graduation ceremony at the University of Minnesota on Sunday. I am officially an empty nester, and I'm looking forward to friends and family being in town.
Hey, on a personal note for everybody listening, Sandy is like the coolest parent in the world, because where is your son like right now?
He's in Japan visiting my daughter who lives in Japan.
That's really awesome. Really awesome.
That's news in our studios. What about what's going on in the world of presentation?
I'll talk about one. And I don't know if everybody's going to have seen this yet, but Office 2019, which is, you know, we're using Office 2016, the Office 365 mm-hmm. version. Office 2019 is in preview, sort of released.
Yes.
I guess I'll say it that way. Microsoft released it earlier to kind of select corporate clients for preview, which kind of irks myself. I don't know about you guys, that they didn't let the MVPs, they're kind of like, you know, we have NDAs and everything else, mm-hmm. and we're supposed to be able to preview and give feedback. And I got a call from one of my clients asking about it, and I knew nothing. Here's the highlights that I gleaned from Office 2019, and this is literally everything I've read because I don't have it to look at. Office 2019, I believe, is the end of the perpetual or the box edition. It is subscription only, according to the paperwork.
Oh, okay.
It is also only Windows 10 and Mac OS. So you cannot mm-hmm. be on an earlier OS than Windows 10. And that Windows 10 needs to be the oh my gosh, what do you call it?
The
Creator Edition. And then Mac OS, I'm assuming it's just, what are we on, High Sierra mm-hmm. right now? I'm assuming it's wherever the current standard is. You know, see the show notes. I'll throw a link to an article that has a summary of each Office app just to, you know, spoiler alert, PowerPoint really does not have anything major that you don't already have.
So it's, I don't want to get into it, but it's subscription, but it's still but it's not 365. Anyway, I don't want to get into it. What else is it going on? Didn't Windows have a major update?
They had a major update. And I'm gonna actually preface this from what you're probably going to talk about. Our IT manager comes in and says, I'm suspending everybody's updates. I'm like, what? She's like, the new update to Windows has a lot of features, but it literally breaks our connection to server 2016. I've got to research that before I can let anybody do it because my test environment computer can no longer act. And we rely on our server, not for apps, but well, actually, I guess we do because it's also the DNS gateway for everybody to get online. But it's where we store all of our files and everybody syncs to the server nonstop. So if you can't get to the server, which is a lockdown environment, so only our internal computers can access it. So yeah, there's a major update that I'm not allowed to get right now. So yeah, what do you know about it?
Well, I have not really dived into it, but the main thing for the presentation folks, as I understand it, is something called quiet hours that they've introduced. Mm-hmm. Now, Sandy, you might know a little bit more about this than I do.
The scenario is we're all frustrated when you're presenting or right before you're presenting and you get a pop-up for an update.
Right. Like various notifications, an update,
yes.
Software update or notification that you have a Skype call or whatever.
Email. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's quiet hours, but there's this thing in it also called Focus Assist, which in theory is supposed to allow you to block certain notifications. Some like you mm-hmm. have an email or this, whatever. However, our understanding is while it blocks a lot of notification, it still doesn't block everything, right? Still, what gets through? Skype, I think, still gets through.
Well, no, it says it won't prevent non-Windows notifications from appearing, like Teams and Skype for Business.
Okay.
Yep.
So it's good. It's a step in the right direction, but it's not a complete thing. So this is basically what happens to a lot of us is you're presenting, you're in slideshow mode, and you get a little notification for something, which should never happen, mm-hmm. Especially in high stakes presentations. And up until now, there hasn't been a way to really get rid of those completely, and apparently there still isn't. But
again, right direction.
We're on the right direction.
Exactly. Well, the important thing with that is that the PowerPoint team worked with the Windows OS team, and they're collaborating on finding a solution that lets Windows do its thing, but not interfere with us in our world when we're in our world. So the fact that they're actually making a feature that works for other applications within Windows, I think is a good step, and hopefully it'll continue to get better. It's also the number one reason I've switched to using Presenter View, outside the fact that Presenter View works now, mm-hmm. but you know, I want those notifications to show up on my screen, not the one the audience sees.
What about, did you guys see Netanyahu's PowerPoint presentation? And this is not going to be a political discussion. I'll just preface that. It's,
you don't want to get into geopolitical.
No, if you don't mind. Yeah, it's, okay. But the point is, you know, when someone like Hillary Clinton, Netanyahu gives a presentation, it makes the news. When they use PowerPoint, then number one, because they use PowerPoint, it usually has a negative connotation. But the presentation itself, you know, one of our upcoming episodes is going to be talking about presentability. It's a presentable presentation. It follows some rules, you know, good, insightful headlines and supporting graphics. It's not a graphically appealing
that's a nice presentation.
Yes. And that's all I've got to say about that.
We'll put a link so everybody can find it, because it's the Iran nuclear secret thing, right?
Yeah, right. Iran lied. The whole screen was filled with the text "Iran lied." Yeah,
and there were a lot of slides too, which I generally like.
Yeah, he mixed it with props. He uncovered 3-ring binders, shelves and shelves and shelves of 3-ring binders of the information they'd uncovered, and as well as 180 CDs or DVDs or something like that. Right. Yes, he revealed them by pulling the black cape off of it.
Hey Nolan, what was your thing about Shutterstock you were talking about? That's news.
So Shutterstock, I switched this year to iStock. So I'm actually, you know, I was a big fan of Shutterstock, but I changed this year. But they just introduced a bunch of new search features, and it's a little confusing because I believe you can only get them through like something they call Shutterstock Showcase, which are like their beta features. It's very confusing why you have to go to a different place to search Shutterstock's catalog in a different way, but whatever. So they introduced a bunch of new features, including the one we'd be interested in is copy space filter.
I did not know that. That is so cool. Yeah.
So now they've almost made it too good, because it's like too detailed. So instead of just being able to click something like iStock used to have years ago to say, hey, show me photos that have copy space, they have this big grid, I think it's like 5x5, where you can pull out and say, which area do I want, you know, for copy space, which initially sounds interesting, but that's not the way designers work. Mm-hmm. So, because if you say, oh, I want empty space in the top left, they're not going to show you an image with copy space on the top right, and you could just simply flip the image.
Right.
Or you can crop into a part of an image if it happens to be in the center or on the side and still get your main thing. So that's not really the way designers work with images. And I wish they knew that, because it's too detailed. It'd be a lot of trial and error to get to see all of the copy space areas because of the way they do it. Okay. But anyway, that's there. So it's a good thing.
So today's episode, we are wrapping up our conversation with three add-in developers. As a note, if you have not heard episode 52 yet, you may want to click pause and jump back a few episodes to listen in on our first part of the conversation with these three developers, Steve Rinsberg of PP Tools, Gil Segal of Tools 2, and Jamie Garak of You Present. In this episode, we're wrapping up the conversation with our last three questions we asked them all. And those are basically, what are some advantages and some disadvantages of the new Microsoft Store web-based add-ins? We also asked, Mac PowerPoint has announced it is now using the same code base as the Windows version, which in and of itself is an amazing software feat. But the question is, will this change the availability of add-ins on the Mac? And our last question we asked them is, what is an add-in you would like to develop? So without further ado, here is our conversation. Okay, let's start with having each of our amazing guests introduce themselves and give us some background.
This is Steve Rinsberg. I'm the owner of a company called PP Tools in Cincinnati, at the lower left edge of the state of Ohio in the USA, for our international folks. I have been developing macros and add-ins for PowerPoint since 1997, the year Office 97 first came out.
So hi, everyone. I'm Gil Segal. The developer behind Tools 2. I'm based in Raleigh, North Carolina, USA. And if you want to find out more information about Tools 2, you can go to my website, www.tools2.com. That's TOOLSTOO.com.
My name is Jamie Garrach. You can find out all what we do at upresent.co.uk, where we have a blog, plenty of free VBA code samples, and even some free add-ins, of which I'll speak a little bit in a bit later.
The conversation asking Steve Gill and Jamie about the Microsoft Store add-ins. And it starts with a slight replay from episode 52. So hang in there if you heard it. It's just so that we have context to the full answer.
So the store, when I first started in this industry, there was a store which was called the Microsoft Office Marketplace, I think. I might be stretching my imagination. And this goes back some way. And they had, this was even before Apple Store and Play Store on Google. So they had the concept of providing third-party publishers with the ability to promote through the Microsoft brand these types of add-ins. So the add-ins that live on your computer, you always have access to them, regardless of whether you're online or offline. And they had a store. But I think with the advent of Android, iOS, iPads, Mac, they had to take a different approach and think, well, how on earth are we going to create an add-in environment which is going to live on all of these different platforms, because they are all written in different languages, they all behave in different ways, and I think that given that you saw task panes coming into add-ins in the COM world, that really laid the foundations to develop the Office apps, which we see and we're going to talk about in a while. Yeah, I think with the web hosted applications, or Microsoft have gone through a number of different changes in terminology. I think because of the history and the legacy of the terminology add-ins, it's kind of followed through. But then you have to differentiate and say, well, what is this new flavor of add-ins going to be called? So they've named them that now Office add-ins, but essentially the difference here is they are web hosted and web connected. So that brings huge advantages, because if I go back that decade to when I first started in this business, there's no way that you would want to distribute the whole world's set of maps on a CD or a DVD-ROM to somebody so that they could access it on their computers. Now you've got web-hosted and web-connected apps. The app sits in the cloud, and it has access to all of this fantastic content, and content which is changing, not on a yearly or monthly basis, but on a daily basis. So photographs, icons, maps, all of these things are very, very fluid. So giving users the access to those and having a web-hosted and web-connected application, or an Office add-in, as Microsoft terms it, is a huge advantage. And it also gives you that cross-platform compatibility. So they've answered the need of users to say, well, I want that add-in, but I'm not on a PC. I'm on a Mac, or I'm on an iPad, or I'm working on PowerPoint online. And they want to have the same functionality across all of those different platforms. And that's what they've been able to do by delivering this. Of course, on the other side, it still gives you there's still merit in the previous add-ins that we were talking about, the ones that sit on your PC, because they have access to the functionality all the time. If you switch to new application add-ins, there's no internet functionality. There's no functionality of your add-in. So you have to be connected to the internet to be able to make use of it, which makes sense, and that's fine.
So, Jamie, do you see a future? What do you see as a future of add-ins for PowerPoint and Office in general, in any environment that we've talked about, or maybe there's a new environment on the horizon?
I think. It's really encouraging. I mean, when I've looked at the apps, the new app store, so the one for the new web-connected Office add-ins, the last time I checked was about a week ago, there were over 180 apps, and around about 50% of those were related to assets. So the things that we just talked about in terms of photography and icons and maps. And you're seeing some really, really big brands there as well. I mean, you're seeing the likes of Pexels, the Noun Projects, Pixabay, Pixels, Shutterstock, and even Adobe. So the fact that these big brands are starting to invest and create these add-ins, I think, is a really positive indicator that these types of add-ins are going to proliferate our lives as we work more creatively within PowerPoint. But it's still all about the right tool for the right job. And I started off by drawing an analogy that the tools that you sit on your computer, maybe the screwdriver for VBA add-ins and the electric one for COM add-ins, the web apps, I see that as a chainsaw. It's a completely different tool. And if I go to my toolbox and tomorrow I want to cut down a tree, then I want to pick the right tool for it. I don't want a screwdriver. I need a chainsaw. The next day I might just want to be putting some screws into some wood. And again, I need to pick the right tool. So I don't see, there's a lot of talk about, is our web apps going to, or Office add-ins, I must keep on correcting myself, Office add-ins, are they going to wipe out the industry for VBA add-ins, application add-ins, and their counterparts, the COM add-ins? I don't think so. I think that they can all live in the same toolbox, and it's just about the people needing to pick the right tool for the right job. If you want to have a utility-based add-in, you don't need to go to the internet and ask a server, can I align these two shapes on a slide? It doesn't make any sense. But equally, you don't want to try and write a very complicated add-in, which is pulling assets and photography and maps and whatever from the cloud all the time. So I see VBA and COM add-ins as kind of offline utility type of add-ins. And the Office add-ins are much more about online content and online service access. I mean,
Sure. So I think both paths have their own justification. I don't see, as I just said, I don't see one replacing the other. So both paths will coexist as far as I can tell. Some tools will be more naturally a better fit for the local install, tools to being an example of that. If I do get around to doing this, the Outlook tool that I mentioned earlier, I'm going to try doing that as a new web-based add-in and see if that works. I think it will. So each add-in, based on what it tries to do and how it interacts with the particular tool it's attached to, will be a better fit, one or possibly an only fit one way or the other. So I think they'll both coexist.
I think that again, Microsoft is working very hard on making this Microsoft Store stuff work the way we developers need it to. They get that we need certain features. And in fact, they're kind of, we've been pushing them in the direction of saying, okay, well, if the platform you're running on can run VBA or COM, whatever, give us a hook from this Microsoft Store add-in that we can say, here, run this. Now, whether that'll actually happen, I don't know. But I think Microsoft definitely sees this as the future. They understand that VBA, it should not go away, and they keep promising us that it's not. COM's not going to go away. But I think they really... Again, just to have the whole promise of Office 365 is being able to work across multiple devices and to have everything right there. You know, I put down my desktop or my laptop, I go out on a date and want to get an idea for a program I need to fix, and I can pull out my tablet or phone and do it, is huge. And that's the future that they see, I think. So they're working very hard on it. But again, my crystal ball is getting a little, we're having reboot problems with the crystal ball. So we'll just have to reboot it and wait till next year, the year after, to see where Microsoft goes with it. But I think it's all in the future, but I don't think the old stuff's going away.
Hey, Gil, can I ask about the Mac? Since the code based has supposedly been joined or merged, they're working with the same code based. What does that mean for add-ins and you specifically? Have you ever created something for the Mac, or do you have plans to?
So I will say that I do get requests for tools too for the Mac fairly often. Well, maybe not often, but once in a while. And to date, it's been a non-option because I didn't have a good way to do that. It would have to be a completely separate product. So with this VBA compatibility, cross-platform compatibility, that does open up an avenue to have the same product on both platforms. Unfortunately, as I said earlier, Tools 2 was rewritten from VBA to VB.NET a few years ago. And so I would have to go backwards in a sense, go back to VBA, which I don't think I will do with Tools 2. So, so specifically for Tools 2, I don't know if there's a Mac version in the future. For other add-ins, I think it's a great, increased market. So having the, you know, the Mac has been a solid platform out there. It's, you know, some years it grows. And, so I know there's a lot of Mac devotees out there and they need tooling. And so having the same code base across both platforms just opens that up to both the developers and the users. I think it's a great thing.
So I heard this announcement that Microsoft had announced that they have got a shared code base, which is a huge, I can't begin to comprehend how much resources actually went into doing this. So, you know, big round of applause for everybody behind the scenes at Microsoft, because that's kind of a hidden thing, giving them huge advantage further down the road to be able to release features in a more parallel way between the PC environment and the Mac environment. I would put an air of caution on a shared code base, meaning everything is the same, because that's not going to happen. A PC is still a PC. It's still a Windows machine. A Mac is still a Mac, and it's still running OS X. So if I'm creating an add-in, quite often I will find myself using the underlying operating system functionalities. I'll give you an example. On the Windows side, I need to use what's called a Windows API. I'm not going to get into the technical jargon, but it's basically an extension of the programming environment so that I can access things that Windows does, such as creating a hyperlink. And I can click on a hyperlink in one of my add-ins, and it will take a user to a support site online so they can get videos and tutorials and everything about that particular add-in. I can't do that on Apple, and I can't do that now, even though we've had this announcement of a shared code base. And one of the reasons is that Mac is running in this sandbox, and you can't access the underlying operating system, and you need to use Apple script rather than Windows APIs. So there is still a kind of disjoint there for certain add-ins and certain pieces of functionality which you want to write. Having said that, you could still write an add-in, which, if we go back to the simple case of I want to press a button and I want to align two shapes in a very specific way, you can now do that in Windows, and you can do it on Mac, and you can create an add-in which will work on both the Mac and the Windows side. Not two add-ins that have the same functionality, but one's for PC and one's for Mac, but you can actually code it in a way that it will work on both sides. So it's getting easier. We've got Microsoft spending obviously some effort on the Visual Basic Editor. So earlier on, I mentioned that you can press Alt F11 on the PC side to open up the editor. You can go into Tools and do the same thing on a Mac. And it's getting better. Every release I see it, it's getting better and better. And I'm kind of surprised, because it goes back 20 years, this technology. It's mature and very stable. You've got access to putting controls and buttons and things in the ribbon. The question for me is, are developers going to invest in recoding their existing add-ins to make them work on the Mac environment? So I think some will. Some will do some of the more simple add-ins. Some of the more complicated ones, you might still not be able to do it for technical reasons. But I have got a very positive piece of news. We started off by talking about the text to outline add-in, which I created for the PC. Just last week, I was able to get that working on the Mac. And I'm very pleased to be able to say that that is now downloadable from our website. And you can install the text to outline add-in now for the Mac on 2016 and onwards.
You know, it's funny. Everybody, I make fun of the Mac, and everybody thinks
yes,
I'm anti-Mac. You know that. Yeah. But, you know, the fact of it is, I have had a Mac next to one of my desktop PCs since the Stone Age, really. I mean, it was a Mac SE, I think, originally. I've had customers who've used Macs, so I've had to take care of them. So I'm reasonably familiar with them. I would like to see a couple changes to make Mac add-in development take off like it has on the Windows side. And one of them is what they're calling the common code base. It's not, I don't think it's quite there yet with the new versions of PowerPoint. Essentially, what's on the Mac and what's on the PC come from the same set of common code, which is fabulous because anytime they add a new feature to one, it means that the other is going to inherit it to the extent possible. And very, very quickly.
Have you ever developed for Mac? Because there are other issues, right? Isn't it the Mac ecosystem as well makes some things difficult?
Yeah, there are. And well, for one thing, again, the feature set isn't quite the same. For a while, they just threw VBA away. So you couldn't do it. Now that's come back. And then in 365 on the Mac, the VB editor just was useless practically when it first came out. And again, they've put in a lot of work into that. So it's getting to where it's almost on a par with the one that we have in the Windows version. But see, that's one of the oddities that's kind of hard to get your head around, that the Mac version may have all the same features as the Windows version of PowerPoint, but until they, what they call, expose those features to the VBA subsystem and get the editor, the VBA editor itself, up to speed, we can't necessarily use those features. And of course, there's also a lot of the add-ins I do for Windows rely on things that are built into Windows. It's called the Windows APA, Application Programming Interface. And of course, if it talks to something that's built into Windows and it moves over to the Mac, that's not going to happen. You know, it can be weird things, file dialogues and access to the internet. There's a lot of stuff that I make use of on the Windows version that's just not there on the Mac. So I don't know how they're going to solve that one, other than we're going to have to figure out how to do the same thing on the Mac and have the code say, hey, if you're running on a Mac, go left. And if you're on a PC, go right. So does that make sense? I mean, it's a difficult thing to do, yeah. But I think it's all going to happen eventually. It's just, it's getting better and better faster than I ever expected it would to happen.
Okay, so final one for us, and this is you getting to be big. What is an add-in you would like to develop, but either cannot because of Microsoft Office's lack of support, or in the conversation we just had, maybe it's the Windows, or maybe it's the OS level lack of support, or you just don't have the time and resources to complete, but it's like, hey, this would be a great thing to see out in the world and available.
So I've got an existing application called SwiftPres, and it runs on the PC. And it's not widely promoted on the website because it requires some interaction with the IT department within an organization. And what it does, it allows users within a corporate environment to manage and insert assets into their presentation. So you have slides, photography, graphics, and icons. So after the conversation that we've just had, you might say, well, why on earth is that application add-in being written on the client side rather than in the new model as a Microsoft Office add-in, web hosted and web connected? And the reason is that I've worked with companies where they don't want to have their content hosted in the cloud. They might have security concerns. They might be worried about the access of that content for other organizations or being hacked, for example. And the first question I always get when I'm promoting this add-in towards a client is, where's the Mac version? Can we have the Mac version? Because they're a corporation. You know, they've got hundreds, maybe even thousands of users, depending on the nature of the business. And I hate having to say no to a client. It's one of my big bugbears working in this industry. I love to solve the problems and say, yes, we can do that. Yes, I can give you the Mac version, but in this case, I can't. And the primary reason is that all of this content is displayed in drop-down galleries. So if you go into the native PowerPoint rib and you click the design tab, you can see all the themes and you can drop down a gallery of those themes. And those are all represented by little images, the little thumbnails. You can put that kind of content as a developer of add-ins into a VBA add-in, or a COM add-in, you can't do it on a Mac. It's impossible because, again, it's using some of the underlying functionality of the Windows operating system. So as soon as you transfer to the Mac side, you can put the buttons in the ribbon, but you can't load anything into these galleries in a dynamic way. So that's the fundamental limitation of why I can't provide SwiftPress as a Mac add-in. And I would just so dearly love to be able to say to every client, I've got it. It's done. It's finished. Microsoft has sorted this out. We can build the same functionality in an add-in, client-side, isolated in your own environment, and I can give it to you on a Mac and a PC.
Wow, that is totally different than any answer I could have even guessed at. And even with it just really underlies the fact, or it just makes a big statement that Microsoft has done this amazing thing with a unified code base, but the operating systems play a much larger part in things than I really knew of. And it's going to still separate things even as Microsoft goes forward.
I think it will separate things on, let me clarify that, it will still separate things on the client side add-ins. So the PowerPoint add-ins, application add-ins, and the COM add-ins go to the cloud and the web connected thing. That problem is solved. So we don't need to worry about that. They fixed that, and that's a great solution. Web connected, web hosted applications running on PC, Mac, Android, online, PowerPoint online. That is just a fantastic environment. But we still have this division due to those reasons on the underlying operating system on the client hosted type of add-ins.
Hey Steve, so you obviously do a lot of custom work for clients in addition to the things you sell to the public, and also you give away some things free to the public. We've talked about Thor many times, which you give away free, which is fantastic. Is there something like really cool you've done for a paying client that is not available to us that you can talk about?
Well, there's one that I know Troy is salivating over already. I showed him recently. This one has been developed as a custom thing, but I kind of hedged my bets and said, well, I want to be able to release this to the public eventually in a slightly different form. There, it's an add-in that goes through a whole presentation and just pulls out all the information out about it I can. So, for example, it pulls out all the author information and stuff, the general presentation level stuff. Then it looks at every slide and says, okay, how many shapes are on the slide? How many words? How many lines of text? Okay, Troy, you're ready to get up the drool cup.
This is I've been talking with Microsoft for years. I've recommended and we need an audit. We need a content audit report. It doesn't need to do anything. Just tell me everything you know about the file. So Steve was demoing this very code-looking thing, so it is definitely not prime time yet, but he pointed out that he could identify what fonts were used on what slides. I was like, wait. So what you could do is you could tell me where Wingding's Pluto Explorer is used on slide 92, so I don't have to keep hunting through everything. I mean, that in and of itself right there, I was sold. I was like, okay, package it up, I'll use it. And then he went into everything else. So yes, these are why we like these people. They do things that are not possible through PowerPoint directly. And that would, this add-in alone would save countless. You know, you didn't talk about FixLinks Pro, which also is another option, another phenomenal add-in. FixLinks Pro, I use it just for the report to tell me where media and linked assets are in a presentation all the time. We don't necessarily need to fix links nearly as much as we used to with so much content being embedded.
Sure. No, absolutely. Video, sound, yeah.
Sure. So I have actually a few things that kind of as a roadmap that I'm kind of thinking of. Several of them fall in the category of these are things I would do today if I had the support for them in that object model that I mentioned earlier. So, for example, imagine what you could do programmatically with SmartArt if you could. So I think the opportunities there are tremendous, but PowerPoint doesn't give us those capabilities today. So there's very little you can do with SmartArt from that object model. So there's not much today. I wish there was, because once that was made available, if it ever is, that could open up a whole world of new tooling. So that's one. Same thing with the new Zoom feature. I think the new Zoom feature is pretty cool. But can't touch it with Tools 2 or with any add-in for that matter, because it's just not available.
Absolutely.
So those are things that Microsoft needs to add to the object model so that we tool developers can do stuff with it and make it even better than it is out of the box. So those are two things. Another one that I've kind of been toying with over the years, and I just haven't spent the time and resources on it to actually bring it about, is something along the lines of slide libraries. So PowerPoint did have a slide library feature that was built on top of SharePoint. I think it got discontinued pretty recently. I want to create something, a much simpler version of that, that you could just run locally. And I essentially just create a library, the idea being that you could just create a library of slides. And when you pull up a presentation, if you happen to have refreshed one of the slides in the library, just click a button and it pulls in all the refreshed slides, just replaces them. So something along those lines that will enable you to create this central bank of slides that you just keep that up to date. And then any other presentation, if you make custom presentations, just pulling slides from that master bank, you could just easily do that with a single click.
That would be huge. The idea of a locally accessible one, because everybody I look at or talk to, it's always a shared resource type of environment, whether it be on an on-prem SharePoint or a shared drive or a cloud-based solution. But I don't think I've had anybody talk about a completely local, accessible, like personal slide library. That would be, I'm voting for it. So there you go.
Yes. So thank you. It has some technical implementation challenges, and it needs some careful design, and it'll probably have to be its own toolbar kind of thing, but we'll see.
Yes, I'm also voting for the separate toolbar because the toolbar is overwhelming when you get Tools 2 available.
So on that note, the next version of Tools 2 will feature what I'm calling UI modes. And I'm imagining three UI modes, beginner, intermediate, and expert. And based on what you select, the toolbar will change. And so we'll have fewer or more things in it to your comfort level.
Hey, Gil, thank you so much for joining us. This is going to be great. So last one here for you. What is an add-in you would like to develop? See, now the problem is I know you have this backlog catalog that's probably bigger than any of us can imagine, but I'm curious if you haven't built something because either Microsoft Office has a lack of support or you just don't have the time and resources to complete it. So what's something that's like on that shelf of, I would love to get this done at some point? And you could say asset library. That would be awesome.
Well, I've got, there is an asset library that I've done and it's available.
Oh, that's a different one. And I like that too. Yeah. That's to add things in. I want a report of what's in that PowerPoint presentation file.
That's coming. Absolutely. Yep. And I'm hoping, I know you've got a couple biggies coming up, Troy, and I'm hoping we can get something you can try beta test for me there. So yeah, that's definitely on the calendar. I'm really waiting for Microsoft Time. It's a new product where you can buy extra hours on a subscription basis. That's what I need most. It's just time to do it.
Oh, I was so taking that seriously.
Sucked him in again. You can speak developer talk and they'll believe anything. I want to look at that from a little different angle, if you don't mind. I've actually, it's kind of weird. I've stopped developing and selling several add-ins because Microsoft has added similar, not always as good, but for most people, good enough features to PowerPoint. So for example, you can now, I've had for years and years, a PowerPoint add-in called Protect, which takes the PowerPoint presentation and converts it into a series of slides that are actually pictures of the original presentation so that you can hand it out to people, they can view it, but they can't edit it or change it. PowerPoint now lets you just do save as picture presentation and boom, you're done. So I have other features in Protect, but hey, that's the biggie and that's what Microsoft gives away for free. So there's really no point in my spending time on that. They now do a superb job of saving presentations as PDFs. That is to say PowerPoint or Microsoft. And I've for years had an add-in that does that, but I've just taken it off the market because they do such a good job. And again, for the extra two or three features that mine had, It's a little hard to justify spending the cost and when it's free with PowerPoint. On the other hand, sometimes they remove a feature from PowerPoint, even though a substantial number of people may depend on it. So one of the first add-ins I ever developed was one to convert PowerPoint presentations to accessible HTML so that blind users could read them. Because originally, if you were blind, you had PowerPoint was a brick wall. You couldn't see through it. As people started to use the add-in, they asked for other features, which is what happens with all of them. And so I kept adding features to it. But really, unless the main feature was compelling, PowerPoint's HTML was good enough for a lot of people. It was just not very accessible. And then they removed HTML as an option a couple versions back, which oddly turned into a shot in the arm for me, because it turns out that a lot of content management systems, you know, software that, oh, for example, hospitals use to supervise training and testing. Mm-hmm. A lot of those rely on content from PowerPoint. People want to develop their lessons in PowerPoint. And who can blame them? It's the easiest, most efficient way of doing it. But unless they can convert it to HTML, it's, again, running into a brick wall. They can't use it in their content management system. So suddenly, my PowerPoint to HTML converter sales took off. So it's, you know, Microsoft giveth and Microsoft taketh away. And that's really what add-ins are all about. It's about adding features that Microsoft either removed or never added in the first place, or improving upon them. And that's really a kick. I've been having a great time doing this for, well, since 97.
Fantastic. Nolan, Sandy, I want to talk on behalf of us, and I just want to thank Steve Rinsberg, Jamie Garrock, and Gil Segal for their time and sharing such an amazing depth of knowledge and, well, their insight, making us all listening to this that much smarter about all things PowerPoint add-ins. So for the three of us, I want to say that we have thoroughly enjoyed our conversation with these gentlemen and are very happy to have a platform for everyone to listen and join the presentation-focused conversation. We have so many fantastic episodes planned for this year. It's really funny. We've already mapped out our entire year of episodes, I believe, at this point. And they're all great presentation design topics and great presentation business guests. So please share the name of the podcast with others and let them know about us so we can kind of show value to ourselves that this is a fun effort that we should keep going with.
And if you have given us show topic ideas, which a few of you have, thank you. It might be a while before we get to them, because we are kind of filled up for a while, but we'll get to them.
Let's move on to tech and pro tips, and I'm going to start. You gentlemen know that I like beautiful things, whether it's fashion or beautiful technology. And one of the technologies that I was slow to follow was the whole smartwatch thing, because I don't like the phone, the look of the iWatch. I don't like how they are big and bulky. So I don't like how it looks like a black rubber band, you know, the Fitbit kind of things. So I resisted that. I did end up using the Gear S2, Samsung Galaxy Gear S2, and I do love it. It's beautiful watch, smartwatch. But I recently bought the Tory Burch Fitbit Alta. And yes, it does look like a rubber band, but it allows me, you know, to do all the things from a fitness standpoint that are important. But I'm also involved in fundraising. I go out to dinner events and I like to dress nicely. I bought the Tory Burch bracelet that goes over it. And so all those fashionistas out there, if you want to be healthy and look good at the same time, I recommend the Fitbit, Tory Burch Fitbit Alta.
So I'm going to go with a total Windows setup tip. It's the Windows Peak feature. It seems great until you're running a presentation in Presenter View. And say you want to do something kind of stealthy, like load a new presentation file onto your computer so that you're ready to quickly open it. So there's a panel discussion going on and it just has a single slide and you think, hey, I'll just move my mouse over here, open up File Explorer, insert my USB drive, copy that over so it's on my desktop. I could even open it in the background and no one would know. Except for with Windows Peek, as soon as you move your mouse to another application, everything disappears and shows you the desktop, because that's the purpose of Peek, is to hide the, you know, the bazillion windows you have open. And obviously you're no longer stealthy with that distraction to your audience because the presentation just went away. So you can turn that feature off. So here's how you do it. You go to the start menu, you go to settings, you go to the, just type in taskbar settings, and that'll bring you to the taskbar settings. And there's a little toggle to turn on or off something called Peek. Hmm. I recommend turning it off on any presentation computer so you don't make the presentation disappear when you don't want it to. Just a little setup tip. If you guys, do you guys do that? Know about
no,
it?
No,
I did not know at all about it. So yeah. I will.
It's a Windows 10 only thing. Peek is, and it's cool until you're suddenly in a presentation, and we won't explain why I turn that off all the time now. But there are good reasons. Nolan, what do you got? Pro or tech tip?
Tech tip. Creating accessible documents in Microsoft Office is a very quick 30-minute. Video course from LinkedIn Learning. So if you're on LinkedIn Learning and you want to know, you want to get sort of an introduction to 508 compliance and what does it mean, and because it can be kind of scary if you don't know anything about it, and it's really not as scary as it sounds. So if you want like a great introduction and primer on it, it's called Creating Accessible Documents in Microsoft Office. It covers Excel, Word, and PowerPoint. And it is from one of our fellow PowerPoint MVPs, Glenna Shaw. So it's a great little course that I went through very quickly, and really gives you a nice grounding in it. So that's my tip.
You know, Glenn is the expert in PowerPoint accessibility. She's really great at that. I had no idea that she'd uploaded that course to LinkedIn Learning. So thanks.
Yes, I didn't know either until I called Glenn and she said, "Have you seen my course?" I said, "No, but I will now."
So, well, everybody out there, it's awesome.
And she is an expert at it.
This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, a design studio with a professional team of graphic designers focused on presentation design. You can find us at www.tlccreative.com, at our blog, www.thepowerpointblog.com, and fun photos of our travels as corporate designers at facebook.com/TLC Creative Services.
This is Nolan from Nolan Hames Creative. If you want to learn stuff and read cool stuff, go to presentyourstory.com, our blog. If you want to hire us, go to nolanhamescreative.com and take a look at our portfolio and lots of other info.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz. You can visit my website and blog at presentationwiz.biz, the Presentation Guild at presentationguild.org, or you can find me on LinkedIn as Sandra Johnson, PowerPoint MVP, in Twitter, and on Twitter as PPTWiz.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.